Yeah.
Okay, so one, and that's what I had to hear about this whole idea of Chestnut. I think an integrated concept with target spot is scanning. Okay, it's literally what I saw the first day, and I think it's still what's going on now. We have to understand, basically, this disease comes on when you can't close it. Dare we go on enough pitch to exactly retard the candidate until we come right back from the shooting? You know, that's the question. I mean, can, are we going to be able? Is the plant going to be able to stand? And people will probably run outside the label if we go that far. But I think candidate management is a key. The second thing is, if you look at all these pictures, these leaves fall out, some of them are yellow and some of them aren't. Why? The yellow should be a toxin.
Bob, if you're in a high density area, this is it. And you do not commit a spray before cancer play. If he shows up after cancer play, you will never achieve
control. I agree. Absolutely.
I really do enjoy the discussion, and I hate to break it up, but we're going to go ahead so we can kind of keep on time. But thanks, everybody, for your comments. our next topic, Ann Phillips, is going to give us an introduction here to the genomics-enabled investigation of the emergent disease, cotton bacterial blight. Ann?
Someone grabbed the lights just down a little.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Ann Phillips, and I am in for Becky Bart. I am a fourth-year graduate student in her program at the Danforth Plant Science Center. So I'll be talking about cotton bacterial blight caused by Xanthomonas, and then also touching on Pseudomonas. So I'll start with a little bit of a background on plant pathogen interactions and how cotton bacterial blight is involved in that story, as well as touching on a paper that we published last year on cotton bacterial blight reemergence, and then this new story of this Xanthomonas-Pseudomonas interaction. So one story that comes over and over again with plant pathogen interactions is that they are commonly specific and exclusive. So you look at the history of the scientists who, from Gregor Mendel representing inheritance, to Koch, who started Koch's postulates that pathogens are the things that cause disease. And commonly what we see is that there is a specific interaction between the host, which commonly there's a resistance gene, and this pathogen, which will have this AVR gene. And this interaction, whether or not they are compatible or incompatible, is what will determine whether or not there is disease. And this can be complicated. The bacteria, fungi, and nematodes have evolved many different ways to generate susceptibility on plants, including cotton. Commonly, they're triggered by proteins called effectors, such as tail effectors and many other effectors that will interact with the biology of the host and generate the susceptibility. More simply, and in terms of cotton bacterial blight, we see really three different types of interactions between these bacteria and the host. The first interaction is the most common that you'll see, and it's just resistance. Disease is the exception, not the rule. Most bacteria in the environment are not going to cause disease on hosts because the plant is able to recognize the pathogen and generate a resistance strategy. However, for cotton bacterial blight, these bacteria are actually able to inject effectors, inject proteins into the plant cell and cause disease. And this is commonly looks like water soaking, as Terry mentioned yesterday. There's this water soaking symptom that is susceptibility on cotton varieties. For resistance, a hypersensitive resistance, a stronger resistance, this is also often triggered by a genetic difference in the cotton plant. And this is going to be a receptor that's able to recognize these effectors that are being inputted into the plant cell. Now, in the lab, what this looks like is a hypersensitive response. This is rapid cell death at the site of the infection that prevents the spread of the bacteria and starves it effectively. However, you don't see this in the field. In the field, with the level of inoculum that you'll have, you'll often it'll often just look like this resistance, because this kind of effect will only be on a microscopic scale. So with cotton bacterial blight, the BART lab actually got involved in this because we commonly work on cassava bacterial blight, but that's another Xanthomonad disease. And we got together with, I think originally Tom Allen, to discover how this Xanthomonas infects cotton and what could be changing in the environment to cause this disease to spread. And the real question that we had is, so this disease is reemerging in the United States. But why? As many people mentioned yesterday, there is a nice long history of research that has been done on the Mendelian genetics of cotton bacterial blight. There are around 20 different loci that we've found that are resistance loci for bacterial blight, and this has been decades now that we've found this. And there's this gene-for-gene resistance where we know that these cotton plants are able to recognize these differences in the pathogens and cause this disease. And for future reference, people mentioned a lot of different references yesterday for getting to know more about bacterial blight, and this book by J.P. Verma actually was a really good starting place, if you can find it in a library. So Tom will mention this later and in more detail, but in 2011, in Tom's research, they found this disease was spreading. And then as the years went on, we found it was spreading more and more over throughout the United States where cotton is grown. And if you overlay this for where cotton is grown in the United States, so this is a heat map of the blue areas where cotton is grown, it much represents where cotton is grown in the United States. And now he has an updated map for 2017 where it spread even further. So why is this happening? Why is bacterial blight spreading when we know we have resistance in varieties? So a first hypothesis that we had was that there's maybe a new species or strain of Xanthomonas. So we found in pepper and tomato, there was an actual new species of Xanthomonas that can cause disease. So the first thing we did was just broad spectrum sequence typing for many different Xanthomonas species, including a lot of our recent isolates of Xanthomonas from cotton. And what we found that both our recent isolates and historical isolates of Xanthomonas and previously sequenced strains, they were all in this one clade. There was no huge difference in the genomes. So look at this on a finer scale. We produced another phylogeny with over 17,000 loci as opposed to the 6 on the previous phylogeny. And what we found was there actually was this huge difference between what we call the race 18 clade and also other pathogens from either Africa or historical different races. And we call this the race 18 clade because it includes Peggy Thaxton's old race 18 strain, as well as our new isolates. So what we found is that there's not a huge difference between our new isolates and these historical race 18 isolates. But there is a difference between race 18 and others. And I should point out that all of these strains represented here, we sequenced those genomes and they are on NCBI. Our second hypothesis was that there's maybe a mutation that resulted in a race shift. So there could be a finer difference between these genomes. And so we looked at this profile of effectors that are present in each of these genomes. These effectors are what cause the differences in races and in Xanthomonad strains. So here's just an example of several effectors that we found in each of these different Xanthomonas strains. And yet again, we see a difference between the race 18 strains and others, but we don't see a difference between the historical race 18 strains and our more recent isolates. And this is confirmed in our phenotyping trials when we phenotype many different varieties of cotton. If the variety is historically considered to be resistant, it is resistant as well to our recent isolates. So we don't see a huge difference in the pathogen. And this leads us to her third hypothesis that Bob mentioned before, and that's that maybe a contributing factor was that many more susceptible varieties are being planted in the fields. And this is kind of contributing to the decrease in herd immunity in these fields, and this is allowing the disease to spread. I'm not an economist or a breeder, so I don't know why we're having more and more of these varieties planted, but there are many different factors that could be included in this. And so the BART lab, just to touch on, we have a couple of different strategies for determining and identifying new sources of resistance that could be deployed. And we come at this from the perspective of the pathogen, all these different effectors, these proteins that the pathogens have to cause that can cause disease. We look at what those are, and we try to identify how this could be causing the disease. And actually, we have one gene that we're interested in and pursuing further. And this actually is historically a gene that's been involved in powdery mildew resistance. As you can see, when you knock down this gene in many different species, you can confer broad-spectrum resistance to powdery mildew. But in 2012, a paper came out that mentioned that there could be also some resistance to Xanthomonas diseases. And we found this gene highly upregulated in a RNA-seq study, so we find that it is probably a susceptibility factor. So in summary for my first part of the talk, I mentioned that there are contributing factors to the disease reemergence that we've identified. And the good news is that we have a couple of different promising strategies and leads for identifying new ways of controlling this disease. But this leads me to the second part of my talk, which is what I want to really focus on more, and that's that there's this new pathogen that's been appearing in these fields in conjunction with the Xanthomonas. And we don't know what's going on or how to combat this. So this all started, I've been collaborating with Terry Wheeler for many years, who is in Texas, and we in 2015, went out into fields and collected some isolates of cotton bacterial blight, some Xanthomonas. And over the years, we were testing these different isolates on different varieties. And finally, we had one isolate that we inoculated on different varieties, and it found that after 48 hours, we found this broad spreading necrosis on different varieties of cotton. And I'd never seen this before. This is not a common symptom with cotton bacterial blight. And we found this to different extents on different varieties, but also on varieties that are known to be resistant to Xanthomonas. And I also found it interesting that you guys were focusing on phytogen 499. I actually use that as a positive control for my Xanthomonas infections because it causes so much disease on phytogen 499. But on further analysis of this inoculation that we had going on is that we actually found that there are two different pathogens in this inoculum. And this is both the Xanthomonas, typical Xanthomonas that causes bacterial blight, but also another white bacteria that we had never seen before. And we've done phylogenetics and sequencing on this bacteria and found that it's actually a Pseudomonas syringae pathogen that we've deemed Pseudomonas syringae malvae serum. And as you can see here, the typical water-soaking symptoms of the Xanthomonas on a Xanthomonas-susceptible cotton are completely different from this necrosis and spreading necrosis of the Pseudomonas. Another thing that we did find is that when we co-inoculate the Xanthomonas and the Pseudomonas, we found that the Pseudomonas overwhelms the Xanthomonas infection, at least by the eye. And so we weren't sure if these pathogens were maybe working together or antagonistically. And we also have now a full genome sequence of this pathogen, and we'll be looking at the effectors, like we did with the Xanthomonas isolates, to see if we can identify what could be triggering this disease. So this leads us to this new model that we have for a bacterial blight in cotton. It's not just one pathogen that's being involved, at least in some parts of these fields. We find that there are two pathogens. And are these pathogens working together? Are both causing susceptibility on the plants, causing disease? Or maybe this could be a reason why we're seeing more disease of cotton bacterial blight. Maybe there was Xanthomonas would normally be causing a resistance response, but the Pseudomonas is allowing it to spread. This is our hypothesis. And what I have to tell you is that that's not what we've seen in the lab. Now, this is a colony-forming unit assay in which I'll inoculate via a needleless syringe a really, really low amount of bacteria into the plant. And so I have three different inoculation sites. So I have the Pseudomonas alone in the plant, the Pseudomonas mixed with the Xanthomonas, and then the Xanthomonas alone. And so day zero, I inoculated much more amount of the Xanthomonas than the Pseudomonas. But after day one, you can see that the Pseudomonas actually increases in the number of bacteria in the plant dramatically. It is a faster growing bacteria than Xanthomonas. And what I really want to point out is here, and by day four, and this increases as we go on many more days, we see that Xanthomonas, when it's inoculated alone, it's able to spread even in resistant varieties slightly. But when it's found in conjunction with the Pseudomonas, it is inhibited. The growth is much lower than it would be just with the Xanthomonas. And so this is just in a resistant variety, but it is also present in susceptible varieties. So the Xanthomonas is able to grow fine by itself, but when you inoculate it also with the Pseudomonas, it is inhibited. And so I'm really not sure what could be going on here. If we see the Xanthomonas and the Pseudomonas together in the field, which we've seen many times, are they occupying different niches within the plants? Are they? Does it depend on the variety? We're not sure. I know Terry has done some research on this as well. So we're really not sure what's going on here. And I also should say that I have also repeated this trial just in cultures without the plant, and I've seen the same trend, that the Pseudomonas will inhibit the Xanthomonas. So the Pseudomonas is causing much more disease in our inoculations, and the Pseudomonas is not. And these are still preliminary. We still don't know how to really quickly identify this in many different fields. I still haven't isolated this pathogen from anywhere besides in Texas. But it is possible that it is present in other locations, and we just haven't looked for it or haven't found it yet or have been misidentifying it. And we actually just recently had a disease note accepted that should have touch on this subject. And with that, that's all I have for you today. And I guess I could accept questions or wait until the end.
We've got time for a few questions if you have something you want to ask her.
Yes.
Yeah, when you refer to resistance, you're referring to only B12, right? You haven't looked at this response with the other gene combinations.
For Xanthomonas?
With this dual pathogen model.
The dual pathogen model?
Yes.
I've looked at a couple of different varieties of cotton. I'm not sure what the source of resistance is there in those cotton varieties. The resistance check for Xanthomonas that I'm using is a hypersensitive response, the inability for the Xanthomonas. Oh, what cultivar am I using for resistance? Let's see. I think I showed it before. Yeah, 5288. And that does show a nice hypersensitive response with the inoculation of the Xanthomonas. I have tried others, but I don't have that with me. Yeah. Right.
A wide range of responses. So there appears to be races already within
potentially.
Yeah,
I see variability in both the pathogen isolates, like you've seen, but also in the cotton varieties. Some of these varieties As you can see, they have much less spreading of the pathogen than others, though I have to say, in all of the varieties that I've screened, I haven't seen like a hypersensitive response. I haven't seen this complete resistance to the Pseudomonas yet.
It would be a great discussion question. Can we pick up with that on the discussion part? That'd be great. Perfect. Thank you, Anne.